Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin, and today on the pod, I sit down with Marissa Cabus, who is the editorial director of the new platform Hope, which is marrying news with activism.
That's the whole problem that got us here as well. We're looking for people to save us from a bad government, from bad actors. We have to save ourselves.
It was a great interview. We talked a lot about what this country needs and how we can all move forward while still taking care of ourselves and not succumbing to feeling overwhelmed or news fatigue. So before we get into that, I just wanted to go through a little bit of listener feedback from Monday's episode and give you Hellion of the Week. Okay, so first let's get into some listener feedback. Brandy in our Facebook group had responded to something that Drexel and I had talked about on Monday's episode. She said, quote, "I just wanted to push back on something from the most recent pod that kind of irked me. I don't think it's good for the left to support privatizing more and more of our government, especially in construction. When those are government jobs, they often pay more than the private sector, you get more time off, and a better benefit slash retirement package, especially for folks who don't have college education. And yes, they even get paid on time." So I also think this is a super important issue. Brandy pointed to an article about public versus private sector jobs in the UK, and it had fascinating statistics about which jobs pay more in public works versus the private sector. And this is really an important conversation. I personally think there should be a good balance of both public and private sector contracts, especially in construction. I mean, I know anecdotally, and this is totally from my life and my own opinions, but my husband's company has done some work for the Los Angeles Unified School District. And the contract they had stipulated that all workers on the project must be union members, they must be paid fairly, they must have, you know, certain time off and overtime benefits, and, you know, all of their workers had to have health insurance. And it was a fairly in-depth requirement for who does that work. And I also think it can be beneficial to use the expertise of outside contractors for public works projects, but I also definitely see how too much privatization can lead to a whole host of other issues, including pay discrepancies, especially folks with college education versus those without college education, and then also favoritism and nepotism in handing out lucrative government contracts. So I think it's definitely a balance, and I think it's something that we definitely should keep an eye on. But it can be a good way to create jobs and stimulate the economy to offer these public works projects to private sector companies. But thank you so much, Brandy, for the feedback. I mean, we love hearing what our listeners have to say, and starting these conversations and taking in all points of view is really important. So next, I want to do a quick shout out to Hellion of the Week. And this week's winner is Dianne freaking Feinstein. Holy shit, I am proud of my home state senator. Dianne Feinstein's office unilaterally released the entire transcript of Fusion GPS's 10-hour testimony given behind closed doors to the Senate Judiciary Committee back in August. Fusion GPS, especially recently, has gone on record saying they wanted the transcripts released. And initially, the chairman of the committee, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, said that he would have no issue releasing those transcripts once they had been reviewed by Fusion GPS's lawyers and any other relevant parties. He since walked back those comments and was refusing to publish the transcripts. So, you know, Dianne Feinstein, fed up with the bullshit, you know, she's the ranking member on the committee. She just ran out of fucks and published it herself. The entire 300-plus page document is now public record, and it does give key insights into Fusion GPS and then their subcontractor Christopher Steele and his famed dossier, which I think it's important to note that the dossier has – a lot of the facts in the dossier have proven out and been verified. Some of it is unverified. There was I believe it was Senator Whitehouse who was saying that there might be like clerical errors or you know, a meeting that took place in you know, it was said to take place in one country, may have taken place in another country, but for the most part, it was a reliable set of documents. So, you know, Dianne Feinstein, bad bitch, was just like, nope, I'm not doing this, I'm not playing this game, and just released it herself. So, which is very Hellion-like behavior. Our guest today is Marissa Kabas, writer and editorial director for HOPE, a platform designed to connect news and activism. So welcome to the show, Marissa.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here on HellFest.
Yeah. So first off, can you tell us about your new project, HOPE?
Absolutely. So HOPE is a new platform. It's very different than a lot of things that are out there right now. It combines media and activism, which is something that's not really common out there right now. I am the editorial director. I'm not one of the founders, but the idea that the founders had was to fill a void that was existing after the 2016 election. You know, it was an outgrowth of the resistance and of the energy around the Women's March. And they realized that people were really frustrated about the news, but they didn't know what to actually do about it. And so many people are just sitting there and stewing in the madness. And so the idea of HOPE is to help you keep up with what's going on in the news and then actually directly connect you to the most appropriate and impactful action that you can take. And it's sort of like a choose your own adventure platform. Mm-hmm. So you get it through your text messages. And it's like having this cool friend who just happens to know a lot about politics and activism.
Yeah, it's really cool. I actually just signed up for it and it was really fun to sort of, you know, pick, you know, it asks you what you're focused on and like then what you can do and gives you some information around it, which I thought was really great. So you mentioned that people, you know, a big part of this is people are frustrated. It's hard to know, you know, what to do. You said frustrated, but what are some other common complaints? I mean, I know that a lot of our listeners have like news fatigue or feel like, you know, overwhelmed or even scared. So, I mean, have you gotten feedback on what this is sort of helping with?
Totally. So overwhelmed is certainly a key word. That's something that we talk about a lot. And that's part of what we're trying to combat here with HOPE, that people are very overwhelmed. And I think feeling overwhelmed is an outgrowth of not knowing what to do, right? Like when you have a clear course of action, it's easier to lessen your anxiety, to feel less overwhelmed. People are definitely scared as well. We get messages to our Facebook page saying, I'm really scared about North Korea. And because of that, we actually did a couple of HOPE pieces about how a nuclear weapon gets launched,
right.
You know, how imminent it would be, how many minutes it would take for that to actually happen. And while that may not seem inherently hopeful, a big part of our philosophy is that the more knowledge you have, the less overwhelmed and the more prepared you are.
Yeah.
So if there's a nuclear strike, sure, that's not really going to do much for you in that event, but at least you know that the way it's made to sound sometimes is that Trump can literally just push a button and launch a nuke.
Right.
And it's, in some ways, it's fairly easy, but it's not that simple.
And there have been some pieces on like the chain of command and, you know, there are people in place to stop a president from just pushing a button and launching a nuke. So, you know, if especially military people, if they feel like the order is unreasonable, they will stop it.
Yeah. There are ways to stop it. And so back to your original question, you know, people do feel scared and they feel also, I think news fatigue is a real thing. I think there's just so many different sources now, and especially with the state of the media, parsing out what is relevant, you know, which viewpoints are the ones that you should be paying attention to. And of course, you know, my work as the editorial director is making that call.
Right.
You know, it's a combination of pieces that are to understand the emotional aspect of stories, but also the practical elements of what are the things really at play, who are the main players, and how we can reach them in some way to maybe stop a disaster from happening, whatever that disaster may be.
Right, right. So to that point, you know, you said that you kind of make the calls on where you get your information. Have you started a discussion on fake news and sort of how the media is covering Trump?
Yeah, it's something that we talk about all the time. And my general point of view is that we don't want to feed the noise. So every time Trump tweets something insane, we're not just going to include it in that day's hope story, because that doesn't feel productive. And it just leads to more hysteria, more feeling of overwhelmed. And ultimately, we see there's nothing we can do about him specifically at the moment.
Right.
And so we clearly have a certain set of politics, and we like to say we have a set of principles that guide us, and they're obviously progressive principles, and we just like to keep it real as possible. And I think part of the work we're doing is combating fake news, because we're being pretty straightforward about it. I mean, we're saying this is what's happening, here's who's involved, and here's how you can actually have an impact, because this is your government too. It's all of our government. And for too long, these people in power have been treated like they can just do whatever they want with our country. And I think this past year has been a huge wake-up call that, no, you actually have to help figure out what happens to this country.
Right. So getting involved in the democracy process instead of just sitting back and keeping it at arm's length. Yeah, that makes sense. So I'm sure that people who would use this platform haven't necessarily gotten involved in activism. Like you said, it's a good way to start. So what are some ways that people can get involved when they've never done anything before?
So I think before this big movement into greater civic activism, it seemed like a really big thing. You know, people don't like to call themselves activists. But once you start doing one or two things every now and then, like, you're an activist. If you care, you're an activist. So I think part of it is just getting over the hump of being like, well, I'm not really an activist. You know, what kind of impact can I possibly have?
Right.
I think an important thing is to figure out the issues that matter to you, because if something personally matters to you, you're more likely to keep up with it.
Right.
That said, there's so many things that you can care about, and it's important to care about things outside of yourself. You know, only caring about your own issues is sort of part of the reason we got to where we are right now.
Right.
And
right.
So I think also acting locally is a good sort of way to dip your toe in the water. You know, work within your community, within your city, see what kind of events are going on nearby, because there's that comfort of being on your home turf and being amongst your neighbors. And I think once you do one sort of civic act, you realize it's not scary and it's actually really empowering.
Yeah, definitely. So we also talk a lot about balancing, you know, news and activism and sort of self-care. So how do you keep yourself sort of from feeling overwhelmed with all of the news?
Well, to be honest, sometimes I really fail at it.
Yeah.
Like all the time.
Me too.
I think it's been a huge shock to my system personally. It was like one day, you know, November 8th, 2016 was one world, and then the next day was like stepping into post-apocalyptic America.
Yeah.
Really, I was actually outside the White House when they called it for Trump, reporting for my old job. And it was like this fog was sort of hanging over the whole city, and everything was under this blurry lens. So since then, it's been a real struggle to balance just living your life and not being ignorant to what's going on around you. So I think that one thing I do is try to not be so hard on myself. And if there's some sort of event I want to go to and I'm not able to make it there, it's okay.
Right.
Like, I'll go another day.
Right.
I'll make a phone call instead. It's about, you have to put yourself first, because if you're not in good shape, you're not going to be any good to anyone else.
Right.
If you're completely burnt out and disillusioned and cynical, like, it's not going to, you're not going to be able to effectively help the people around you. So I think the best thing I've learned is to just realize you're doing your best at any given time, and you're probably already doing more than you'd ever done in the past.
Right.
Which, if all of us are doing that, then that's a huge change overall. So we're all in it together, and you're not an army of one.
Right, right. I feel like that's been really important. We talk a lot about, one of our listeners had this beautiful metaphor. When you're in a choir and you're all singing together, if one person needs to take a breath, there are still other people singing, and then you keep singing while someone else takes a breath. So that sort of collective, that collective voice is really helpful.
That actually really resonates. I grew up singing and theater and staggered breathing. It's
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. It really has helped me personally when I need to take a weekend and unplug. So I kind of want to switch gears. You wrote a great piece for NBC News about Oprah's speech and her potentially running for president. And there's been a lot of discussion about this. So what do you make of this discussion? Like, where is this coming from?
I think we're a nation starved for inspiration. And it's so rare nowadays to see someone with significant power stand up on TV in front of millions of people and deliver a speech like Oprah did.
Right.
And we were all riveted. I mean, I sat there watching sort of breathlessly, and she's always inspired me, but this was really, at least from what I've seen of her work, unlike anything I've heard her say before.
Yeah.
It was so pitch perfect. And it was especially because of the tenor of the awards and the Me Too and Time's Up, you know, sort of coloring the night. It just was this beautiful cap on that moment. And so I think that the response is very emotional. And particularly for women, we're looking for a woman to swoop in and fill the Hillary void or fill any sort of void that you feel from the people at the highest echelon of power.
Right.
And so the discussion has gotten, it got so out of hand so fast, which also just showed where we're at right now in our course.
Right. Well, because you said it's not on Oprah to defeat Trump in 2020. Like, that's not her responsibility.
No. I mean, she's, whether she runs for president or not, that's completely up to her. And I don't think she'd be the worst person. But she, for people to say Oprah is it, it's our only choice, and she's going to save us. That's the whole problem that got us here as well. We're looking for people to save us from a bad government, from bad actors. We have to save ourselves.
Right.
And that starts from the very bottom. That starts from the grassroots level. And like I said, volunteering in your community. And in my piece for NBC, I also point out that there's so many women of color already doing the work.
Right.
So Oprah has done incredible work for communities all over the world, but there are women who are just as smart and just as capable who could also help lead us out of this mess and bonus have civic experience.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that was for me, like, I also am very inspired by Oprah, but I think our president should be someone who has a history of public service and civic duty and who's worked in the system that they're trying to change. You know, I think you need to know the rules to change them.
Sure. The thing that bothered me about the whole debate is that I actually had huge problems with people on both ends of the spectrum because the people demanding Oprah run, like I said, that's not up to you. But then the people who are think it's a laughable choice and are so dismissive of her.
Right.
That is what it means to be qualified as a politician these days has fundamentally changed.
Yes.
And if you think that this Trump genie is just going to get stuffed back into the gilded bottle, you are sorely mistaken.
Yeah.
I mean, whether we impeach him, whether he gets voted out in 3 years, whether he serves 8 years, knock on wood, God forbid, it's never going to go back.
Right. Right.
And so this idea of saying, I want someone who's a Harvard Law School, like top of their class, and has been a senator and a state senator, that's amazing. And we could have that. But I have a feeling that this is just the beginning of more unconventional people getting into politics.
Right. Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, yeah, we always say, like, what if someone is thinking about running and they don't know if they should do it, they don't know if they're qualified, it's like, okay, look at who our president is. You are probably overqualified at this point.
I mean, really. And that's sort of what Oprah said. She had thought, she said in an interview a couple months back, she thought to herself, oh, I'm not qualified. You know, me president, that's ridiculous. And then I looked at who we have and I thought, oh, okay. And I also think that's just part of being a woman, you know, even Oprah, arguably the greatest, one of the greatest women in the world. She had that voice in the back of her head that doubted whether she'd be able to take on that responsibility. Whereas our current president just waltzed right in with the confidence of a million men and said, mine, I'm taking that.
Right, right. So what do you think are attainable and actionable goals to defeat Trump in 2020 if it comes to that? You know, if he does make it through this term without being impeached, which I put the chances at like 50-50 at this point. So what are things, like, who can we support if not Oprah? Like, who should we be looking at, not just to save us, but to put our time into?
I think that it's wide open at this point. You know, we have probably 2 years till we start to see who the front runners are that are emerging that will be in the Democratic primary. I think that we just have to keep a really critical eye on people and hold them to the highest standard possible without tearing down the service that they've done. You know, I look at the way that Kamala Harris and Kirsten Gillibrand have been covered already, and Elizabeth Warren to some extent. And there are incredible, powerful women in the Senate. And anytime they've had a misstep, it's seen as this fatal flaw.
Right.
And they could never reach the presidency because of it. And again, look at who is president. And to say they're not qualified is frankly insane. So, I think it's just, you start keeping your eye on people who inspire you, who are preferably currently working in public service and have expressed some desire to move to higher office. And then don't be afraid to fight for them.
Right.
If you really believe in someone, you shouldn't just roll over because the party says this is who we're throwing our money behind. We have to keep raising our voices and let the party know who we want. Like, we, the people, should have an influence on who they are throwing their support behind and not just corporate interests and the donor class.
Right,
right. So I'm really hoping that whoever the eventual candidate is super progressive, who isn't someone who has to sacrifice progressive values. And we might as well just like go all in on someone who's going to really look out for everyone and not just certain groups of people.
Right. So who are you looking for? Like, who of the people we've already talked about would you put your support behind?
I am hesitant to really say at this point, because I think this first year of the Trump presidency has just been a recalibration. It's just adjusting on the defense, constantly on the defense. And it's really hard to show your governing chops when you're just trying to tread water and keep people safe from harmful policies. And yes, that is part of governing, but I'm really curious to see who's proactively putting forth policies that will not just reduce harm, but will help towards a greater good. And so Senator Gillibrand does come to mind because she has been so vocal about sexual assault in the military. That's been the thing that she's championed her great part of her career. So I like that she is zeroed in on a specific issue and hasn't backed down from it, even when it wasn't considered popular or cool,
right?
Which sounds interesting to say about sexual assault. Like, now it's trendy to have yours, you know, put your energy behind protecting survivors. But right. Now, you know, it almost shows that she had this vision that at some point survivors of assault would get the sort of attention that they, you know, so sorely deserved. Right. So that's all a long way of saying I really don't know.
That's fair.
I am hopeful that people will start to emerge that look like someone who could be president.
Right. And then what stories are on your mind? Because when you sign up for HOPE, they ask you what is on the top of your mind right now. So what stories are on the top of your mind right now?
A million.
Right? All of them?
The stories, all the things. I have been very preoccupied with JACA and the Dreamers. I sort of can't believe that it's, I mean, I can believe, but I am also can't believe it's dragged on this long.
Right.
I heard a little while ago that supposedly Senator Flake said they have come to some sort of agreement. But since Trump rescinded it in September, I am just sort of in constant disbelief at how these 800,000 Americans are being treated.
Right.
And they've gotten a lot of attention, which is really heartening for me to see. I mean, I think the media coverage has been pretty robust, but it's frustrating because it didn't lead to a decision being made by the end of the year, which is what they really wanted.
Right.
And so for 6 months, close to 6 months, he's young men and women who have been such productive members of our society, who for all intents and purposes, aside from a little sheet of paper, are Americans,
right,
and know no other home. They have just had to be in a constant state of stress. And this, I'm sure, is going to be traumatic for them for a good long time. So I've been thinking a lot about them. And of course, just everything with Me Too and the constant revelations about men being revealed as predators. But the thing that really I think is so remarkable is how many women have still managed to shine despite all these obstacles.
Right.
And I've been thinking about that a lot. Like, man, I know a lot of really amazing women who had to deal with this guy and that guy and there's so many things stacked against them, and yet they're still running things. They're still right at the highest levels of power. So I've been thinking a lot about power dynamics, and I'm hoping that they'll start to shift, and I feel like they already have.
Yeah. We like to do action items for our listeners at the end of every show. So what are some action items that you have right now?
Definitely call your members of Congress about DACA.
Yeah.
in the most recent edition of HOPE, we were talking about this pilot program in New York State prisons that would make it much more difficult for families and friends of inmates to send them books.
Mm.
And it's from what I can tell, it's just to please vendors and to be able to charge more money and to help these vendors profit. And as a result, this very fundamental right to read is being taken away from these, I believe they're all male prisons, from these men. And, you know, you're already so disconnected from the rest of the world. And so this is something that, you know, reading and books is something that keeps them connected. And to deny them that feels particularly inhumane.
Right.
There's Jared Kushner, of all people, is initiating a conversation about criminal justice reform and prison reform, which is, you know, makes sense in some ways because his father, you know, was in the prison system,
right,
but it's near to him. And I hope that that people start paying more attention to that, because we do have the highest incarceration rate in the world. And it's, when you say action items, part of what we think of at Hope, educating yourself is an action in and of itself.
Right.
And so my advice would be, go beyond the headlines. You know, click on things that you may not necessarily be drawn to right away, but sound like they're probably kind of important in some way or another.
Right.
Read the story that's an explainer about tax reform, or about, you know, NAFTA, or about just really understanding it, because if you're more educated yourself, you're much less more likely to be swayed by someone on TV or a politician who's just feeding you talking points.
Right. And you are speaking my language right now.
I mean, it's true. Like, when we were embarking on this project, we thought of action in the traditional sense. So showing up at a protest and calling Congress and donating, and those are all crucial and we recommend them all the time. But we realized part of it is just how to have a conversation around a certain issue is so important. Right. One story that we did that did really well was about open enrollment for Obamacare. And we were telling people exactly how to tell someone that they should sign up during the open enrollment.
Right.
Because, you know, why being uninsured is bad, you know, why you're leaving everyone more vulnerable if you don't sign up for healthcare yourself.
Right, right.
It's intuitive to you, but like, to really go step by step, people really responded to that because it was giving them specific things to action on.
Yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense. It can sometimes be hard to do actions without the knowledge behind it. And like you said, I could talk about tax reform all day, not because I love taxes or anything, but because I think it's an unsexy topic that's not talked about enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's my two cents. And so finally, Marissa, Sarah and I, we like to do gratitude checks at the end of our shows as well to take stock of the good things that are happening in this political dumpster fire. So what are you grateful for today? And it can be anything big or small, personal, political, anything.
I am grateful for having a safe and warm place to live.
Mm.
And I know that sounds a little bit corny,
nope,
but that is prompted by a story I read this morning in the New York Times. It was about this bodega owner in Brooklyn. I live in Brooklyn, and it's you know, a couple miles away from me. And he is a Dominican immigrant. He's lived here for many years, and he lets homeless men stay in the basement of his bodega overnight. And he's been doing that for years. And some of them recently out of prison. You know, one he spoke to served time for murder in prison, and now he's out. But all these men, they don't have anywhere to go. And he, you know, no judgment, he just opens his doors and lets them stay in his basement. And it's nothing glamorous, but it's warm and it's safe. And I think we need more people like that in the world. And it just made me reflect on my privilege to have a space where I know that I'll be warm and safe.
Wow, that was very profound. Well, Marissa, thank you so much for joining us today. You can follow Marissa Cabus at Marissa Cabus on Twitter, and you can follow Hope at Talk to Hope. And then you can also sign up for Hope at meethope.us. It's a really great platform. I'm using it. I think it's great. And I think it is a really good way to take digestible chunks of the news and then what you can do about it.
Yeah. And actually, probably the easiest way to sign up is just text Hope to 44397. So PE to 44397.
Great. Thank you so much again, Marissa. It was a pleasure having you on.
Yes. Have a great day.
All right, Hellions. I hope you enjoyed that amazing interview with Marissa. I loved what she was saying about activism and informing yourself. And like she said, right now, something you can do today is call your members of Congress, call your senators, and ask them about DACA and a Clean Dream Act to pass a spending bill. So that is it for us. And we'll be back here on Monday with our fabulous guest host, Drexel Hurd. Thank you so much for listening.